Imagine being so involved in the act of murder that it no longer held any emotion for you at all. No shame, no guilt, pleasure, or pain. The same emotion one may have eating an apple. It was the same feeling that Donald Henry Gaskins felt when taking a life, and many lives he did take. This is his story today on The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Donald Henry Pee Wee Gaskins Jr. was an American serial killer, rapist, and cannibal from South Carolina. As a young man, Gaskins was repeatedly arrested for robbery and rape. In 1955, he escaped from prison and found work with a traveling carnival. Gaskins was charged in 1976 with 8 charges of murder after an associate told police officers that he had confessed to multiple murders. Police found 8 buried bodies on his property in Prospect, South Carolina. While awaiting the death sentence in prison, Gaskin killed a fellow inmate on death row with a small explosive. He was put to death on September 6, 1991. More of our story comes from crimelibrary.com. Murder had lost its novelty for Donald Henry Gaskins by the fall of 1980. A prolific killer dubbed the Redneck Charlie Manson in some press accounts. He had claimed his first victim at age 19 in a jailhouse stabbing that got him sentenced to 9 years for manslaughter. Now in middle age, he was serving 9 life terms in South Carolina's state prison, one for each of 9 victims police had recovered. And that tally barely scratched the surface of his crimes. Gaskins was well acquainted with the means of violent death. It held no mysteries. But the crime he had in mind this time was different. Gaskins has never killed a victim on death row. Rudolph Tyner was already marked for death by the state, but he wasn't dying fast enough to please some people. Condemned for the holdup murders of Bill and Myrtle Moon at Murrell's Inlet in Georgetown County, Tyner expected to drag his case out for a decade or more with appeals before he kept his date with the electric chair. He might even beat the rap, since racial aspects of the case, black gunmen, white victims, added weight to his appeals. South Carolina's death penalty statutes had been twice invalidated by Supreme Court rulings in the past 8 years, providing that anything was possible. Tyner's worst problem on death row so far was feeding his insatiable narcotics addiction. Outside the prison walls, Tony Simo schemed to accelerate Tyner's execution. Simo was Myrtle Moon's son by a previous marriage. Bent on avenging his mother's death through prison contacts, he negotiated for the hit, passed along from one convict to the next until he connected with Donald Gaskins. Finally, he had a contact who could guarantee results for a price. A maintenance trustee housed next door to death row, Gaskins had free access to condemned inmates, mending broken pipes, toilets, light fixtures, anything at all. Unknown to Simo, Gaskins also had a tape recorder, capturing their conversations for posterity. A blackmail tool as good as money in the bank if he should ever manage to escape from custody. Gaskins decided poison was the way to go. Befriending Tyner, on his visits to death row, Gaskins began to slip the hold-up killer junk food, marijuana, pills, and heroin. Tyner received the gifts, unquestioning, and begged for more. Simo supplied a box of candy laced with poison, strong enough to kill a horse. But Tyner merely suffered stomach pains. Over the next 12 months, Gaskins repeated the experiment 5 times, spiking his target's food and drugs with ever larger toxic doses, all in vain. Tyner lived on, oblivious to the coincidence between his gifts and stomach-churning trips to the infirmary. 6 strikes and out. Gaskins gave up on poison and decided to construct a bomb. SEMO supplied the wiring, hard wire, and C4 plastic explosive smuggled past distracted guards in hollowed-out heels of cowboy boots. Tyner agreed to let Gaskins connect a homemade intercom between their cells. Gaskins strung wire through prison heating ducts, constructed a receiver for his target from a plastic cup, and packed it with C4. The two men synchronized their watches for a test run on the evening of September 12, 1982. At the appointed hour, Tyner pressed the loaded plastic cup against his ear and spoke to Gaskins on the far side of the wall between their cells. The last thing he heard through the speaker cup before it blew off his head, Gaskins later said, was me laughing. But the last laugh belonged to the jailers. Press reports initially described Tyner's death as suicide, but there are no real secrets in prison. Snitches started talking. Tony SEMO soon confessed his role in the plot. A grand jury was impaneled indicting Gaskins and SEMO with two inmate accessories for murder and conspiracy. The state of South Carolina had failed to execute Donald Gaskins for his previous murders. Now it was prepared to try again. Few observers would agree with Donald Gaskins' claims that he was born special and fortunate. On March 13, 1933, in rural Florence County, South Carolina, an illegitimate child who never met his father, Gaskins was known for the first 13 years of his life as Junior Parrot, his mother's maiden name, or simply as Pee-wee. Derisive reference to his size, Gaskins was alternatively beaten and ignored by a series of brutal stepdaddies until his mother finally married one of them in 1943, the union adding four half-siblings to the family. The new man of the house beat Gaskins and his older children just for practice, as Pee-wee recalled, but the violence was a part of daily life. Gaskins steadfastly insisted that, "I certainly weren't in no way what you could ever call abused." Still, something was obviously wrong with Junior Parrot. He was pissed off at girls from his earliest memory, unable to explain the rage coherently. By age 10, he suffered from an onset of lifelong brothersomeness. Described a feeling like a ball of molten lead rolling around in my guts and up my spine into my head. That feeling presaged outbursts of erratic violence, sometimes massaged by forays into criminal activity. Gaskins was clever with his hands and natural around machines and motors. He quit school at age 11 to work on cars at a local garage, teaming with two friends named Danny and Marsh in his spare time to form a McGarden gang dubbed the Trouble Trio, starting off with thefts of gasoline from service stations after closing time. They soon graduated to residential burglaries, counseled along with the way by Danny's ex-convict father, buying an old car with the proceeds from their robberies. They ranged farther afield, visiting prostitutes in Charleston and Columbia. Their sexual experiments also included younger boys. But the Trouble Trio made a critical mistake when they gang-raped Marsha's younger sister. Threats and promises of cash failed to secure her silence, and paternal wrath descended on the boys in full force. Danny's father defended him with a shotgun, but Gaskins and Marsh were strung up by their wrists in a barn and whipped bloody by parents wielding a leather strap in relays. Pee-wee's cohorts fled the area as soon as Marsh could walk again, and Gaskins soiled for a while before he met another teenage thief, resuming weekend burglaries. One Saturday in 1946, he was prowling a house when one of these tenants, a girl he knew, surprised him. She was armed with a hatchet, slashing at Gaskins and chasing him outside, where he disarmed her and struck back, gashing her arms and splitting her scalp. The girl survived to identify Gaskins, whereupon he was jailed for assault with a deadly weapon and intent to kill. The judge found him guilty as charged and consigned him to South Carolina Industrial School for Boys until his 18th birthday. Junior Parrot heard his true name for the first time in the courtroom as a sentence was pronounced. So that's where we begin our story today, on the dark side of Wikipedia. If you enjoy this program, we greatly appreciate your support over on Patreon, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. There you can get access to our advanced episodes, all commercial-free, our full archive, all commercial-free as well, and our final chapters exclusively for Darksiders. That's what we call the supporters of the program. It's Tony and Sean with you on today's episode. So, thoughts thus far on the rather extreme life of P. Kiwi here, Donald Henry Gaskins?
Strike number one, the gentleman went by Pee-wee at a young age. That clearly built up some resentment and bitterness to other humans.
And this is before Pee-wee's Playhouse, too.
So, obviously, if you have a baby right now, and, well, that's almost an honor to be called Pee-wee or Gumby, hee-haw. But you have a daughter. You have a daughter, Tony.
Yeah.
You have a daughter. This seems like a fine scholar to hopefully be lucky enough to wed your daughter.
Oh yeah, this would be a perfect guy, wouldn't he? He just seems like a lovely human being. It's an interesting story because the guy is a piece of shit, but there's some actions that like where he took out the murderer who was on death row. Okay. Sometimes a little vigilantism, I'm not that opposed to. But obviously you can't do that and you shouldn't do that. But the and the other thing here, the parents of the daughter who was gang raped, where they tied him up in the barn and beat the shit out of him. That too, I'm totally cool with. I'm surprised he didn't die. Because if someone that happened in my world, they'd be dead. The body would still be hanging from the rafters, and I'd let the cats eat it. So I don't know. He's obviously just someone who has lived a horrible life. Parts of it under his control, parts of it not under his control, parts of it the product of his circumstances. But it's. You know, he's obviously a horrible human being that's very, very damaged.
And what's interesting is many stories we hear about where it is this murder, this murder, this murder. It's all a telling tale from beginning to end of how heinous this individual is. Whereas in the case of old Pee-wee here, he did four terrible things. And then he almost was a good guy where he took out a even worse inmate than himself. And then he got a little bit what he deserved with the family having, because all too often we talk about if I could get my hands on this person that did this terrible thing to my family member, oh my goodness, yeah. I would do things with my ice scraper that you wouldn't even imagine. Whereas the family got a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And as you said, the fact that he still lived through it. So it's a little bit of a hills and valleys, as you said, not a good guy, not going to get any community service awards,
no.
But it's not just a straight, he killed this person, and then four more, then 10 more, then 12 more. Along the way, he got a little bit of what he deserved. And with killing another bad guy, 0.0002% of, hey, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you also have to look at who else are you going to get to kill someone for you other than someone who's obviously done a lot of horrible shit themselves. You don't like hire, Billy down the road who works at T-Mobile on the weekends and then works at the soup kitchen. The rest will be like, hey, Billy, can you go and kill that guy that murdered my parents at the Costco? Sure. I get off of work at 7. I'm going to go work out a little bit. But after that, I'm all about it. Where would you like me to meet him? Behind the dumpster of Lowe's? Yeah, do that. Okay, you got it, buddy. Want to go get some?
Interestingly enough, I wouldn't put it past everyone.
Yes, that's true. You never really know. There's been some folks at some stores I've been to recently. I was like, not quite sure what you do outside of work. You never really know, I guess. Let's continue. Go ahead.
Just to wrap it up quickly, as we're taping this here in April, 2 weeks ago, terrible news, FedEx facility just outside of Indianapolis where a former employee went in and just randomly shot people.
Yeah.
That to the point of when you do see some people at your local T-Mobile or wherever you are, again, it all comes back to feeling for other individuals. You have no idea what they're going through. And some people, they don't know how to have that outlet of going for a run or working out or getting on a rowing machine that they ultimately will get to that point where they break.
Yeah.
And you happen to ask, hey, can you kill my ex-brother-in-law? He's really annoying and he's an open mouth chewer. Sure. $200. Done. I get off at 9.
Yeah, and what that ultimately comes down to is a problem of lack of mental health help in our country, where it's affordable or available or in any way attainable for many people. I mean, unless you're in a well-populated area and you have money, good luck getting any sort of quality help. There's freelance, there's people who do it pro bono and all that, but they're few and far between. And the quality's probably, you know, not there, and it's not their fault. They're probably getting started. And it's luck of the draw if you find somebody good, but it's, you know, that's the thing. People end up finding really shitty ways of acting out their aggression rather than trying to find healthy ways of working through it. You know, working through and acting out are two totally different things. And that's the problem. We don't provide enough ways for people to work through. We find a lot of ways for them to act out. Or they're ultimately forced to act out without ever really working through. So let's continue in with a story of Donald Henry Gaskins here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Gaskins would later say that he received his real education at the state reformatory near Florence, a few miles from where he grew up. His second night in custody, Gaskins was ambushed in the shower, beaten and gang raped by a group of 20 boys. Afterward, he accepted protection from his dormitory's boss boy, who demanded daily sex and other services while sometimes loaning Gaskins out to friends. With no escape from torment inside the walls, Gaskins plotted his first escape. 13 months after his arrival, he fled the reform school with four other inmates. All were captured the next afternoon, but Gaskins leaped from the truck on his way back to Florence, this time running as far as the hideout he had once shared with his cronies of the Trouble Trio. A local lawman found him there and persuaded Gaskins to surrender. His reward? 30 lashes with a strap in 30 days, hard labor, isolation, digging ditches, and broiling daytime heat, with whippings every night for trivial infractions. After serving his penalty time, Gaskins went back to the dorm for the boss boy who owned him. For the second escape, Gaskins chose a single accomplice and remained at large for 6 days before bloodhounds tracked him down. The punishment this time was 50 lashes and 4 months hard labor. Returning to his dorm, Gaskins found a new boss boy who wasn't so easy to please. This one, Pee-wee recalled, particularly liked to watch gang rapes with me on the bottom. Gaskins made his third escape alone, fleeing south to an aunt's home in Williamsburg County. She convinced him to return after the warden promised leniency, but the promise was a lie. Back in Florence, Gaskins faced more isolations and a nightly regimen of 20 lashes. On the seventh day, he punched a guard and was beaten unconscious, packed off to the state mental hospital in Columbia for 5 weeks. While there, Gaskins suffered a ruptured appendix, his life saved by emergency surgery. Deemed sane and fit for normal custody, Gaskins was shipped back to the reformatory in 1950. Light duty soon gave way to threats of whipping and reprisal for his prior conduct, fleeting to Sumter, where he joined a traveling carnival. He fell in love with a 13-year-old member of the crew and married her, the first of his six wives. On January 22, 1951, after one night together, for his bride's sake, Gaskins surrendered to authorities and spent the last 3 months of his sentence in solitary confinement. Released on his 18th birthday, Gaskins tried four different jobs in his first 6 months of freedom, finally settling down to work on a tobacco plantation. Soon, he joined forces with a reformatory bunkmate to loot and burn tobacco barns, collaborating with landowners on insurance fraud. They torched six barns before Christmas of 1956, but rumors spread quickly and Pee-wee's partner wisely fled the state. Gaskins stayed on, but he soon had cause to regret it. One day on the job, his employer's teenage daughter and a girlfriend cornered Gaskins in the barn, taunting him with rumors of his barn-burning forays. Gaskins snapped, lashed out with a hammer, and cracked the girl's skull. Jailed for arson, assault with a deadly weapon, and attempted murder, he beat the first charge at trial and struck a bargain on the others. The prosecutors promised Gaskins 18 months confinement in return for a guilty plea, but Pee-wee failed to get the deal in writing, and Judge T.B. Grinkner and other ideas, he pronounced a 5-year sentence and then added another year for contempt with Gaskins cursed him. Pee-wee was on his way to the big house. Well, I guess in some ways, when you hear of the way this guy had been treated in jail, the abuse and the trauma that he went through, I guess it's not completely shocking that he married a 13-year-old in the circus. Is that, you know, I guess fair to say? Not okay, not good. But, you got to be thoroughly fucked in the head at that point to make any sort of logical choice or responsible choice.
If you were to go to Baskin Robbins with old Donald, he would not get vanilla.
What do you think? What type of ice cream do you think this serial killer would get at the Baskin Robbins?
Of course, the 13-year-old fan favorite, Circus Elephant. It's more of a sherbet, and it has chunks of belt and blood in the mixed in. So he really, he's one of those. On the surface, he looks like a ho-hum, Uncle Don. If you Google pictures of this fella, he's got a smirk, a surly look. Surely doesn't look like he likes to be tortured and then, marry 13-year-olds. But all too often when you peel the layers back of an onion, next thing you know, it's a fucking gargoyle right in the middle of that onion.
Yeah, belt and blood in the ice cream. That's a new flavor for Baskin Robbins. It's like you're
well, we'd like to call it B&B.
You're chewing.
We don't want to scare our customers off.
Is this jerky? No, that's belt. That's from Henry back there. And the blood, that's from well, we're not going to talk about who that's from.
Old Don Pee-wee Gaskins, he's been dead for years, but we just have some vats in the back, some drums of his old blood. And, we are the frozen custard game and frozen ice cream game. It's a competitive market, so you need to differentiate yourself. There's these yogurt mountains and froyos of the world. We just want to up our game a little bit. And logically, the next step in the competition game is being forward thinking is, human blood and belt.
Taste the rainbow is really what you're getting there at the Baskin Robbins. Never gonna think of ice cream toppings or mix-ins the same way ever again.
Gotta look at those bars, man. Those dessert bars, similar to salad bars back in the day at Sizzler and some of those Wendy's. It used to be just you got your standard nuts, your crushed nuts, maybe an almond version, pecans, whipped cream, hot fudge, caramel, strawberry sauce. That's it. Now you got everything from crushed up Fruit Loops to Reese's, three different types of M&Ms, pineapple, strawberries.
There's too many.
So why not throw in some human blood?
You could probably put it up there and just wait to see how long it takes for people to realize what is in the container. You got the little juice bottle.
I don't know. I'm not driving tonight. I may as well just put all of them on.
Like, this says human blood. Is that like Tutti Frutti? No, it's human blood, sir. No, I know, but what is it? It's blood. It's blood.
Is it more like a raspberry, like a peach cobbler? It is blood.
It's irony. Very irony. It's blood. Let me try some of that. And what is this over? This is belt? Is that like chocolate bark? No, it's belt. It's leather belt shredded up that was used to whip people. Oh, you guys get so creative with your titles these days. Enjoy your ice cream, sir. Yeah.
Can you eat two scoops or just one?
Yeah. I really feel that we have too many options now with everything at stores because it's hard to enjoy or get excited about anything new anymore when it comes to like products or things like that. And we live in this land of abundance. Example, yes, being the Froyo place. I never know what the fuck to put on my stuff, and I end up putting too much on, and I'm like, I should have just stuck with like Heath and chocolate syrup or something. The same with here's another example. I have I like playing old like Nintendo games and things of that nature. As a child, I thought nothing would be better in this world if there was a box that literally contained every game that ever existed. Well, now here in 2021, that exists. So I was in my room the other night, and I was just kind of, relaxing. Like, I'm going to turn this on and play some games. And there's like 7,000 games on this thing. Everything that was ever created in our childhood. Do you think I could find one game I wanted to play? No, because there was too many to choose from. When there was like the one you rented at the store and you spent $3 of your allowance money on it for the weekend. Oh, whether it sucked or not, you were going to invest 12 hours into that fucking thing. Now it's like, get me to play it for more than 2 minutes. It's got my attention. And it's an overabundance problem that we have that I think really leads to our demise of just mental clarity. And we're all so distracted with everything. And everybody is ADD now because it's impossible almost not to have it.
It's very interesting, and it's almost becoming a necessity that you have to. In the world of this podcast, by definition, you listening to this human person, mm-hmm. thank you, first of all, but you obviously have found us. It is, you get a ding on your phone every day. The brain is reprogramming itself where all of these alerts, take the dog out, take your medication, new episode, all these things that when we have those once a month or once every 6 months or nearly not enough days where you put the phone down, you go 24 hours without your phone, you go for a walk, you go for a hike. It's so refreshing because back 5, 10, 15 years ago, that was a part of daily life. Every Sunday, you'd go for a hike. We weren't as attached to our phone, but it's a lot harder to not come across as a person that says don't do that, but then does that themselves because yeah. you can't really get through everyday life as a functioning, working human without kind of having that necessary evil, our personal laptops, aka our phones.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it feels. I mean, just to that or just being on social media. I mean, if you're running a business or anything like I am, I got no fucking choice. I have to be there. And if I'm not, I am missing out on, you know, half of the game of getting people to find our shows, our products. I would love to never be on social media for the rest of my fucking life. But if I like to continue to have an income, I have to pretend to be there and enjoy it. And sometimes I do enjoy it. But at the same point, I'd rather be just sitting on my porch playing with my daughter than trying to make a TikTok or some shit like that. But it's kind of one of those things where, well, then how can you kind of integrate it into your life? And then, you know, it's a slippery slope, but it's, I guess, being present in today's world if you want to be a part of it. And that's kind of what you got to decide.
Very true is if you want to be present, but you want others to be a part of you being present and to, yeah. As you said, promote your business that we all enjoy, you're forced to live the present through a lens yeah. or through multiple lenses.
Yeah. It's funny. Everyone will be able to see what you did and the documentation of it, but you'll look back and go, did I really live that life?
Why the fuck didn't I just leave the phone in my pocket?
Yeah, exactly. Let's do a little bit more on Donald Henry Gaskins. This is probably going to be a two-parter. And then the final chapter will hit at the end of the second part of the story. So continuing on with Donald's story, when Gaskins entered the South Carolina State Prison in fall of 1952, it struck him as the dreariest looking place on earth. There are few new faces, and new rules to memorize, but the reality of prison life remained unchanged. In place of dorms and boss boys, the state pen had cell blocks and power men who took what they wanted by force. Gaskins went in expecting another round of gang rapes, but instead he was ignored until the afternoon when a hulking con approached him on the yard and told him, "You belong to Arthur." Over the next 6 months, while Gaskins was sharing his cell with a brutal rapist, he realized that the only way to save himself was to become a power man. To that end, knowing it meant murder, Gaskins started looking for the biggest, toughest victim he could find. He chose Hazel Brezel, a con so vicious that no one on either side of the bars dared call him by his despised first name. To integrate himself with Brazel, Gaskin used the same tactic he would employ with Rudolf Tyner almost 30 years later. He bought gifts of food from the kitchen, becoming a fixture around Brazel's cell block, accepted as part of the crowd. On his fifth visit, Gaskins found Brazel on the toilet, only one guard stationed outside his cell. Striking swiftly, he cut Brazel's throat with a stolen paring knife and warned the bodyguard to flee before guards arrived. "I surprised myself at how calm I was," Gaskins later wrote in his autobiography, Final Truth. "I didn't really feel nothing much at all." He admitted killing Brazel in a fight and bargained a murder charge down to manslaughter, two-thirds of a 9-year sentence, concurrent with his pre-existing term. "I figured that was a damn fair deal," Gaskins said, "considering I wouldn't never again have to be afraid of anybody in the pen no matter how long I was there." He spent 6 months in solitary and emerged a power man in his own right, the Pee-wee nickname now a label of respect. Gaskins cruised through his next 2 years of confinement, enjoying himself but 1955 brought news that his wife had filed for divorce. Despondent, he hatched a plot to escape in a garbage drum, jumping from a truck along the highway to Florence. Stealing a car, he drove to Florida and rejoined the carnival at Lake Wales, meeting his next wife in the process. At 19, she was 3 years younger than Gaskins. Their marriage lasted all of 2 weeks before he dropped her at her parents' house and hit the road. They were never divorced, but that small technicality would not stop Gaskins from logging four more marriages over the next two decades. His new love of the moment was Betty Gates, a sideshow contortionist whose supple body proved irresistible. They left the show together, driving Pee-wee's stolen car to Crookville, Tennessee, where Gates claimed her brother was jailed pending trial and some undisclosed charge. On arrival, Gates confessed that she was wanted in five states on counts ranging from forgery to armed assault. Gaskins agreed to deliver bail money and a carton of cigarettes and returned to find Gates in his car missing from their motel. He was awaiting her return when police came to arrest him, breaking the news that Betty's brother, in fact her husband, had escaped from jail using a razor hidden with the smokes. Putnam County sheriffs initially accepted Gaskins' tale of being duped, but then the recovery of his stolen car and false ID saw Pee-wee held on a fugitive warrant from South Carolina. Before his return to the Palmetto State, he pulled 3 months in Tennessee from aiding an escape, plus six more for slashing another inmate during a brawl. Back at South Carolina State Pen, he spent a miserable time in solitary before FBI agents arrived to charge him with a federal Dyer Act violation for driving a stolen car across state lines. Conviction on that charge earned him 3 years at a federal lockup in Atlanta, Georgia. Gaskins later described that sentence as a college education in crime. His cellmates, whom he dubbed the Three Wise Men, were bodyguards for imprisoned mafia Prime Minister Frank Costello, serving time for income tax evasion and casino skimming. Pee-wee's reputation preceded him, and Costello dubbed him the Little Hatchet Man, reportedly offering Gaskins work as a contract muscle if he ever felt an urge to settle down. The federal prison term was concurrent with Gaskins' remaining time in South Carolina, a favor from the court that left him eligible for parole in August of 1961. Forgiving his escape, the state released him with a new suit, $20, and a bus ticket back to Florence. I guess I don't quite understand how this guy can now have killed multiple people and the state keeps going, hey, here's a new suit. You can leave now.
If you're ever looking for a reason of how screwed up the legal system is.
Yeah.
Pee-wee.
I mean, I know this was quite a long time ago, but it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense that we're saying, yeah, you can go. It's okay.
I mean, his fifth wife, at the rate he's at, he'll actually be married to a legal adult female.
At some point. It also is kind of scary at the time, too, because, you know, when you think of, I mean, not that you necessarily think of circus performers as, you know, sometimes the most upstanding citizens on the planet. There's, I'm sure, plenty that are. But you also don't think of them as being like serial rapists and murderers either. And I guess this look at, oh, let's all take the kids to go watch the rapists and murderers at the Big Top. In some cases, that's quite literally what you were doing back in those days.
They didn't have the TikToks. They didn't have the video games. They didn't have all the things that our natural brain needs a diversion.
Yeah.
So a little bit more of a real life. Grand Theft Auto Human Edition.
Yeah, I mean, we look at the world today and we think how screwed up people can be and how screwed up people are.
They always were.
They always were. We just didn't hear about it as much because there wasn't social media. There wasn't a 24-hour news cycle. There wasn't, you know, seven news networks and then another 42 that go on the fringes of online and will feed to whatever weird shit you want to hear about or believe. It was basically what you read in the newspaper and then I heard down at the coffee shop and that was social media right there. That's all you had. And
interesting is to allow you to do a podcast. There's not a lack of material. All this stuff is a part of history. Whereas if you do this to current day, it would all be spit out on Twitter every 17 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly. It'd be like play by play of where's he at. But dark story, and it does continue on as he's released. And we have a part two that we'll get to in our next episode. And then after that, we'll hit the final chapter of the Donald Henry Gaskin story. So more fun, kids, coming up very soon on the program. So make sure you press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you do not miss part two of the Donald Henry Gaskin story here on the Dark Side of Wikipedia. And that will wrap it up. If you like the program, become a Dark Sider. That's a supporter of the show. Get access to all the advanced episodes of the show. If you're wanting to hear part two of this right now, you can as a Dark Sider. Part two is over there for you, along with other episodes that have not yet been released. Go to patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia, or go to our website, Dark Side of Wiki, and click Become a Dark Sider. You'll get access to all of it. Binge away, no ads, and you can certainly enjoy that. Follow me on TikTok at Tony Bruschi, B-R-U-E-S-K-I. Same for Insta as well. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of Wikipedia.